All right, guys, welcome to the show. This is Deborah Gets Red Pilled, episode somewhere in the high 170s. Who knows?
Who knows?
Let's Deborah, see. You're here with us. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, thank you. How about you?
I'm doing doing pretty good. Having a good day. Drank some coffee. It's early in the morning. I feel, not that early, but I feel energized. Yeah, it's good here on the homestead. We got a bunch of snow.
Yeah.
Like 4 inches the other night, followed by a whole bunch of sunny, crisp, sunny, cold days, which is how I like it. Mm-hmm. No rain. There's still a good amount of snow. Not a good amount, but a lot of snow remaining on the ground. So it's everything's good. All the animals are doing well.
And, very good.
Yeah. What's going on down your way?
I hate saying it's always the same, but yeah, our weather's been, you know, we've had some frost overnight, sun's out, then it'll sprinkle a little bit. So kind of blustery, but you know, it's okay.
Yeah. Have you been, up to anything new, any new life experiences?
No, went on a few hikes this week, which was, I mean, that's not new for me, but that's always welcome. And
so you're going on hikes with your gym?
Yes, they organize once a week in the spring and summer a hike.
Awesome.
And sometimes, I mean, we've gone out Tennessee Valley, which is, you know, to the coast here. And, you know, some of the local canyons and yeah, it's nice. There were only four of us yesterday, but it was still good.
Right on. Yeah. I really need to get back to the gym. I am, not happy with my physical body right now. It's weird. You always wonder, like, if you can, you like see like big fat obese people and you're like, did they see that start happening or what? Did they just let it go too far? And then like all of a sudden they're like 300 pounds.
Yeah.
And I'm 43 and I'm at the age where it, like inactivity starts adding up exponentially, you know?
You get so much exercise just doing what you do every day.
Yeah, you know, but still,
I
could be farm strong and still out of shape. So I want to be farm strong and in good physical condition. So I think there is as much as I don't want to sound like a douchebag, there's a CrossFit gym close to us. Mm-hmm. And like 3 days a week, it's free for people in recovery.
Is that right?
Yeah. So Emily,
that's
and
fabulous.
I've always wanted to work out with Emily and she was never really open to it. And I think she finally is. So we might start doing that. And I still really want to get back to jiu-jitsu a couple days a week. So we'll see how it goes.
Did you find a place that's closer to where you are?
No, I haven't. I don't know. Yeah. I was having some crazy pipe dreams today. I was thinking maybe, you know, the way that like most people start a jiu-jitsu gym, if they go to like a little town and do it, they'll like rent a space from like I used to go to a small gym in Novato that was just starting up and they rented like the back room at a CrossFit gym. Uh-huh. And that's how the guy did it for a couple years and struggled. I know. Like I have good friends that are good at jiu-jitsu. Maybe I'll start asking people if they want to like do something like that close to me. Like the town, St. Helens is like starved for it. Like they need it. They have like a really good high school wrestling team and stuff. Like it would work.
Yeah.
And if somebody could just find a place to rent and start out 2 days a week and drive up from Portland and do it. I mean, I think you could grow. So I might start putting that out there to some people. Would be really cool. Maybe I could invest in something like that or it's a long ways off, but it'd be cool because getting to the gym across the river is pretty, it's a long drive.
It's a long drive.
So, but yeah, other than that, let's see. I'll plug the Patreon, guys, patreon.com/Deborah Gets Red Pilled. We are putting out new content every Saturday for the most part. Every week we're putting out an episode. Last Sunday we put out a real, what I thought was a really good episode. If I was just a patron, listening to somebody else, I would have loved the episode. We did it with Chud, Dean Reiner, who is back into the podcast world, guys. So go resubscribe to Up Is Down. And our good buddy Chris from Abs in a Six Pack was on. It was a fun show. It was a goofy show talking about some serious dark subjects. We talked about, we welcomed Dean back, talked about his show. He's also doing a new true crime show, kind of, he calls it a murder show. We talked about serial killers and, you know, we all kind of subscribe to the Dave McGowan, what's it called?
Strange Stories from the Canyon.
Program to Kill is his serial killer book.
Oh.
You should check that out, Deborah. It's a big one. Uh-huh. But we all kind of subscribe to that, and that's that, you know, these serial killers weren't operating on their own, and even if they were actually doing the murders, there was something else behind them, such as CIA, MK Ultra involvement, and things like that.
Yeah,
if not a whole, you know, dark cabal of people doing them together and one person taking the fall, kind of like what we saw with the Sons of Sam Maury Terry book. But so we did that. We got some new donors. Steven joined the Paul Pelosi tier. So thank you, Steven. And we got our second reptilian donor, Janet. So I've been talking about how I want to do something special for the $20 a month people. So guys, every month, if you are in the $20 tier, if you get me your address, either send it to me on Patreon or in the email, the show email, DeborahGetsRedPilled@protonmail.com or at pm.me if you want to go shorter. Send me your address or an address I can send something to. I will send you something from the farm that I make here. So it'll be a surprise every month, but that will be involved. I think I'll probably do like beef jerky or something first. So let me know. I was thinking about sending people sausage, but I figured like to send sausage with dry ice through the mail, it would probably be more than $20 per person, you know? I made last Saturday, I made some, it was my second time making sausage unsupervised by myself. And it was incredible. I can't believe how good it turned out. I did an amazing job, and I'm not usually that quick to compliment myself, but this sausage was amazing, Deborah.
I can't wait to come and try some.
Yeah, I followed a recipe. I took 3 days to make it. You can do it all in one day, but it's better if you do three steps over 3 days. And it was so good. It's pork with jalapeno and cheddar and a bunch of other spices. And then I cured the meat. It's pork with a little bit of beef in it, and like 20% beef, 80% pork. Cured it for a day with curing salt and the spices on it, ground it the next day, stuffed it, and then smoked it for a couple hours at like 155 degrees. They call it cold smoking.
Mm-hmm.
And you do it at 175 until the sausage gets up to 155, and then it's like fully cooked. But what people do is right after they take it off, you put it in an ice bath, you stop the cooking process, then you like kind of just like put it out on towels or whatever, dry it out, and then you can either recook it right then, is what you would do if you like were doing it at a restaurant,
mm-hmm.
or if you want to store it, I vacuum sealed it all then and freeze it, and then I just put it back on the grill for another, it takes like 20 minutes to heat up. I did it the other day and it turned out fantastic.
That sounds great.
Yeah, like cold smoking, it makes it like snap. Like when you you can like snap it, you know,
uh-huh.
It makes like a noise, and it was so good. So yeah, sausage making is awesome. I'm really excited about it.
You have a vacuum sealer also?
Yeah, I just got one this week. I went to Walmart last Saturday, got one, didn't work, took it back, got another one. And yeah, so cool. It looks super professional and everything. I'm really excited. So yeah, that's the good news. That's the homestead news.
Really great.
Yeah, all the animals are doing good. Two boys were fighting out in the pasture this morning when I woke up, but I think they settled it. So they're good now.
Leonard and
Larry. Yeah.
And Larry.
Yeah. So I was proud. Larry doesn't have balls, so he's at a disadvantage, but he was fighting back pretty good. And he was actually the aggressor on some of it.
Oh, good.
It's gnarly to watch him go for it. They back up and get a running start and headbutt each other, you know?
Ram.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. But they're doing good now. So pigs are good. The other sheep are good, and chickens are cranking out 10 plus eggs a day. It's good over here. So
that sounds great.
Yeah. But if you get out into the world or start watching the one thing before we start. So for the Patreon guys, I really think you guys should get in there. $3, I updated what each tier does. I hadn't had it listed. So the $3 tier, all it does is give you video of these episodes. You don't get any of the premium content with it. You give another $2, so you get $5 a month, and you get everything, video and audio. And so this Saturday, I will be having on my friend Ryan, who I know from church, and we will be starting to get, we're going to start getting into this book, which is called Orthodoxy and the Religion of the Future by Father Seraphim Rose. And it is, it was a book he wrote in 1979. Father Seraphim Rose is a famous American Orthodox monk and later became a priest. And he was from San Francisco. And then he went and lived at the monastery in Platina, California, which is on Highway 36 west of Red Bluff. And I would love to make a pilgrimage there someday in the near future. I've actually been to that tiny little town for a friend's bachelor party, for a sober bachelor party at the Wild R Horse Ranch. But wow. It wasn't like a normal bachelor party, you know. We like went and camped out and talked about deep things around a campfire with no booze or drugs or strippers or anything. So it was somewhat wholesome. But yeah, so this book, he wrote it in 1979, and it was his first book, I think. And he covers a lot of the stuff that was going on in the late 70s with the New Age movement and his thoughts on it. He gets into like UFOs and all sorts of stuff and explains. That's the thing that a lot of people that have come to Orthodoxy recently are kind of like guys like me who came from a libertarian conspiracy background and are just really, really frustrated when they hear like conspiracy Christianity and people talking about it and explaining things away, saying things that are left out, or it's all everything you take out. Like, I mean, current events could be included in it, but you look at anything that there is, UFOs, cryptids, all the conspiracy stuff, it can all be explained through Orthodoxy. And then when astrotheology is a big one. I remember we had David Matheson on, and he said he was a Christian, and he said he had to leave the Christian church because it wasn't addressed. And it is. It's all there. It's just when starting with the Great Schism in 1054, when the Catholic Church left and became the Catholic Church and left behind Orthodoxy. And then from there in the 1500s, when they had the, Martin Luther started the Protestant break off. at that point, all this stuff, they just started picking and choosing when they would start these new Protestant religions. They left out all this stuff that can be explained. Everything can be explained. So this book
give that history, and
it doesn't give the history. I'm just starting it, but it gets into like the UFOs and all this stuff that the New Age was doing in the 70s. So I'll read the little this is the preface to the fifth edition. I'll read this. So on the cover, on the first page, that's a picture of Mount Shasta, mm-hmm. which is by the monastery in Platina. Which has so much stuff around it. That's supposed to be where Agartha is, the entrance to the center of the earth, all this stuff like that.
Huh.
Yeah. So check it out. I'm reading from the preface of the book, which is the preface was written by, let's see, I think another Orthodox priest. It was written by Hieromonk Damascene, and he is another monk at the St. Herman of Alaska Monastery in Platina. So, on May 10th, 1976, Father Seraphim Rose was driving home to the St. Herman so it was earlier, 1976, not 79, was driving home to the St. Herman Monastery in the mountains of Northern California. He was coming from Oregon, where he had just picked up a shipment of his first published book, Orthodoxy and the Religion of the Future, a book that would one day become spiritual dynamite, especially in Russia. The book was an examination of contemporary religious phenomena, symptoms of the new religious consciousness, which prepared the way for one world religion and marked the beginning of a demonic Pentecost in the last times. So remember, we've been talking about the one world religion and the ecumenism and stuff like that. Never before had such a penetrating analysis of 20th century spiritual currents been written. For until now, no one had studied them so closely according to the timeless wisdom of the Holy Fathers. In the early to mid-1970s, when Father Seraphim was writing his book, much of the phenomena he was describing was considered part of an aberrant fringe. But he saw what was coming. He saw that the fringe would become more and more the mainstream. So it's talking about kind of the spiritual, not religious, that whole deal. He saw the frightening unity of purpose behind a wide range of outwardly disparate phenomena and saw the end result looming over the horizon. As he traveled southward with his book, which was to blow the mask off the most subtle forms of demonic deception in our times, it was appropriate that he should stop at a nucleus of neo-paganism in America, Mount Shasta, considered by some to have been a holy mountain of the original Indian inhabitants. Mount Shasta had long been a center of occult activities and settlements, which were now on the increase there. Father Seraphim drove partway up with his truckload of books, standing in the shadow of the immense mountain on a spot where neo-pagan festivals were commonly held. He sang paschal chants, sang of Christ's resurrection and his victory over Satan and the law of death. A thought arose in his mind which had come to him before. An Orthodox priest should come and bless this mountain with holy water. Later, after his ordination to the priesthood, he would return to bless the mountain. But his book would do more. It would move mountains. And this is that's the first passage of the book in the introduction, in the preface. And it really rang true to me because, like, I think last weekend or the weekend before, a whole bunch of podcasters that I actually respect and like their podcasts had a huge meetup to do all that stuff at Mount Shasta.
Is that right?
Yeah. So it's still there. To
do what stuff?
To do, just have like a big New Age meetup.
Okay.
Uh-huh. You know? And so, it really hit home for me. So I'm really excited to get into this book, and I will we'll be breaking it down, talking about my friend Ryan has had a whole bunch of pretty wild experiences, supernatural stuff, and and he's pretty well read and knowledgeable into Orthodox theology. So we're going to get into that. And then as I get more into this book, maybe we'll have some other people on to help break it down for Patreon stuff. I think Buck Johnson just put this up on his Twitter or Instagram and saying how relevant it is. And so I'm really excited to get into it. And hopefully I have a lot of, I've started about 50 books the last year and finished none of them. So hopefully I can just commit to this one and burn through it.
Is but it available in bookstores or
get on Amazon?
Okay.
Yeah, I'm sure it's and you can also, I think, get it through the St. Herman of Alaska bookstore if you don't want to support Amazon. I'm sure they would prefer that too. So he also I just ordered, he also has another, I mean, he's got a whole bunch of books, but he has another one on near-death experiences. Uh-huh. It's crazy. I mean, there's a dog-headed saint. There's a dog-headed man in Orthodoxy.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. There's, I mean, obviously I know nothing.
Yeah, me too. So if you want to look into that one, I'm going to get that book too. It's by this guy, Jonathan Pageau, P-A-U-G-E-A-U. And it's called God's Dog. It's a graphic novel for like children. And Jonathan Pageau is another theologist who knows Orthodox theologists, and he's an icon maker too. So check that out. He's a cool dude.
Wow. And when did he write that?
Recently.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like a comic book.
Uh-huh.
So yeah, my friend reads it to his kids, his little kids. So. Oh.
Wild.
Cool. That went a little longer than I expected. But Deborah, have you, we should, I kind of like starting out with this. Have you been watching anything special on TV, or have you noticed any special, any movies lately that stood out to you?
Well, there's been a lot of zombie type stuff.
Have you been watching The Last of Us?
Yes.
What do you think?
I really like it.
It is so good.
I was a big Walking Dead fan.
I was up until about the fifth or sixth season, and I was like, wait, I thought that was supposed to be the last episode. I'm pretty sure they advertised it as the last episode before.
Oh, maybe so.
And then it went like 20 more seasons.
Yeah. The, it got too diluted, I think, is what, for me, you know, I liked the tight clan, you know, of the original characters who, you know, got killed off or whatever. This one, it gets into the soul of people, I think.
Yeah.
You know, and some of the characters, like the young girl, Elle, I think is her name.
Ellie, yeah.
Ellie is so fabulous. And the episode prior with the gay couple, it really hit my heart.
Yeah, they did a good job of portraying like your normal like elderly gay couple, you know, mm-hmm. that would live like in your neighborhood probably, that weren't mm-hmm. like super bitchy and flamboyant, but
yeah,
were
just
like
normal, just
pretty bit,
live,
a little bit bitchy,
live their,
you know?
Lives. Yeah.
Yeah. Nick Offerman's a good actor.
Oh,
is that that guy's
yeah.
name? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But Billy Ray Valentine hit me up about it and was like, are you watching this? And I was like, I haven't yet, but I've heard it's great. So I went and watched it halfway through the first episode. You know, the whole like the shit's hitting the fan part.
Uh-huh.
I paused it, went and made sure everything that I have is ready to go. Like it made me go check everything out and dust everything off and get it out of the closet and make sure that it's in within reach and ready to go. So
yeah, it's pretty wild. And I wasn't really grabbed by the first episode, but by the second one I was fully committed. Yeah,
I'm into it. I'm all the way caught up now, and we watched them all within mm-hmm. 2 days, you know, and now we're waiting for the new ones to come out every week. So yeah, I like it. And I'm sure there's some sort of underlying occult symbolism to it that I'm missing, but I just I think it's a good one.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. And I like the I had never seen, I think his name is Pedro Pascal.
Yeah.
The lead actor.
Yeah,
he's been in other stuff, but nothing I'd ever seen.
He's in a bunch of the Star Wars stuff, I
think.
Yeah,
the on Mandalorian
Apple TV.
Stuff.
Yeah, I don't watch that. So
I don't either.
He's on Twitter. He's like your typical shit lib, like Rob Reiner, but good actor. So
mm-hmm.
I'm into it. Yeah, he was on The Mandalorian with Gina Carano, and Gina Carano got canceled off of it for her political views because she was on the other side. So Gina Carano is rad. She's super hot. She was like the original female MMA star way back in the day. Yeah, how about, have you seen Stolen Youth on Hulu yet?
No, my streaming thing as of 2 days ago is on the fritz. I can't get it to work for any of the channels. And I know that's on Hulu, right? That's the one you told me about on Hulu.
Yeah.
So I'm.
Guys, you should go check this out just as like a study of people. It's so so wild because it shows it. So it's a story of these kids that are all at this really expensive top tier liberal arts college. It's in New York. Sarah Lawrence College. I think that's kind of like the epicenter of social justice warrior politics. Like that's where it all comes out of. But it's like where Emily went to college. It's like a $60,000 a year liberal arts college in the Bronx, I think, or somewhere around there.
Mm-hmm.
It's crazy how these high-end liberal arts colleges are always in bad neighborhoods, you know? I don't know if the Bronx is a bad neighborhood, but you know, it's like Mills College where your other daughter went. It's in East Oakland, but it's like this beautiful campus.
Beautiful.
Like once you get on there, but it's in the kind of in the hood, you know?
Yeah.
And, but yeah. So what happens is this girl, they have like this communal kind of apartment type dorm. It's like co-ed, it's student housing, but it's off campus and it's like an apartment. And, like there's like five or six kids all living there. And this girl's like, oh, my dad just got out of prison. He's going to come sleep on the couch. And he had been in prison for, I guess, like white collar crimes, but knew a bunch of people, like knew Gorbachev and like stuff like that. And within like a couple weeks, he has like all these kids just hanging on his every word. He's telling them that, you know, their parents, molested them, they didn't love them, they're messed up because of the way they were raised, just typical cult leader stuff, and these kids fall for it hook, line, and sinker. And you know what, I within like, you know, a year, he has them all living in an apartment that's just like this huge, it's like an apartment in Manhattan, just a hoarder apartment. And he has them totally brainwashed. They're giving him all his money. He's telling them they owe him money for breaking his stuff. So like, and what I got out of it was that like, at one point there's a girl, he gets this whole family, there's three kids and he gets them all. One of the girl that he gets, it takes him about 2 weeks to get her to lose her mind. And she's a Harvard graduate who had recently gotten her medical degree, was like 2 weeks away from Columbia, and was 2 weeks away from finishing her residency to become a full-on doctor. 2 weeks has her losing her mind. Done. And
she was on one of the I think it was the Today Show I saw her on.
But what that brought me back to immediately, Deborah, was our episode on midwits and like all these people who end up in these what we think are these colleges and institutions that are, you know, the smartest of smart people. Like, you can't, what he did to these kids, you can't do to me. I don't think I want to talk to somebody that's like knows about psychology, but I don't think that can be done to me. I would be like, dude, you're a dick and I think you're full of shit, and like I didn't get diddled by my dad. Like, why are you doing this? Why are you saying this stuff? And Yeah. So like the people that we think are the smartest of the smartest, you can take them and in 2 weeks have them. And then that person, and she was like also training to be a psychologist.
Yeah. So you'd think she had all the tools.
But that, I mean, imagine if he had allowed her to become a psychologist. Oof. And then like, that's who you're going to, you know?
Yeah.
And so it just goes to show you, like, you can't just take doctors' words for anything. She was a medical doctor and almost a psychologist. And yeah, just don't go. I mean, there's bad. Go to the hospital if you get stabbed. But man, stay out for a lot of other stuff, because these people, it's wild. And the scary thing is like, those are the kind of the people that graduate from those kind of places are the ones that end up like in these unelected government jobs formulating policy for the world, you know, about when you need to put certain things into your body, when you need to wear certain apparel on your face, you know, just stuff like that. And those are the people that get those jobs, even though they have a degree in 15th century French literature. Like, that's what they end up, they get those jobs in those circles, or they go work for some nonprofit making $200,000 a year solving the homeless crisis, you know, taking your tax dollars, stuff like that. And that's what I took away from. I don't think a lot of people take that away. I think a lot of people take like, oh, these poor kids were victims of this guy. It's like, no, these people that end up in these institutions that are we viewed as the tip top of American intellectualism are just dum-dums. And it's not the end all be all. Like, I think you find smarter people on a job site building elevators, in my opinion.
Have you seen all of the episodes?
Yeah, I watched the whole deal.
What happened to his daughter?
It's weird because his daughter is in like the first episode, and then she's just kind of gone. It doesn't say anything about her after that.
I wonder where she ended up.
Yeah, the guy ends up going to prison for 60 years.
Yeah,
but it's crazy. It shows you what he does. Like, he has these like deep one-on-one conversations with him. He gets him in, and then he has them all on Adderall.
Oh God!
And
where does he get the prescriptions? Or he,
I don't know. I think in those liberal academic circles, I think everybody does it. I think it's really, really easy to get. I think most like all like journalists and stuff like that are on it. People in those in college now, it's I think it has been for a while. It wasn't when I was in college. It wasn't out yet. Might have been around, but people weren't doing it. But I think in college now, like I think you can get it prescribed really easily. And then I think there's probably an illicit trade for it because it's so pervasive.
Yeah. In my day, it was no-dose.
Yeah, I used to take no-dose in high school before football games and stuff. But so he has them all on Adderall. So, and then, so they're deprived sleep. And then he's like not letting them eat. He like puts a lock on the refrigerator and stuff. You can tell because like all these kids that escape end up turning out to be, these two girls get super fat, like really fast. But it's insane, like what he does, how fast they just turn into like little, they turn into like 2-year-olds. It's crazy. Like laying on the floor, having temper tantrums, like screaming and crying for no reason.
Wow.
So yeah, that's the people forming policy for most of us, are people that are susceptible to that kind of brainwashing. And it just goes to show you that these people, like they probably were truly scared of the COVID. He formulates this crazy conspiracy around this one guy who he blamed for sending him to prison. And he tells like all the kids like think that their parents were involved with this guy. Even when they were little, they talk about how they met him when they were little and how he molested them and all this crazy stuff like that. Their parents are like working class, poor Costa Ricans who are like, this is insane. And even after one of the girls like breaks free, like it's like months and months after. And they're like, have you ever, like, they have no idea what's real anymore. They can't, they can't, Lord. They have no, it's really interesting. So I recommend everybody check that out. Hulu, it's called, what is it called? Stolen Youth. So, but yeah, that took a while. Let's get into some news stories. It's all happening, Deborah, in the words of Alex Jones. They are hitting us with everything, everywhere, all at once. It's so crazy out there right now. We've got UFOs. We've got environmental disasters. We've got government cover-ups. We've got Epstein client lists. We got everything. Did you come across any news that you want to get into first?
Well, I did do a little recap on the balloon stuff.
Okay.
And you want me to get into that just briefly? Because I know that you have some
important... Let's wait on that. Because okay. we can work that in probably somewhere.
Okay. But
let's start out with, are you familiar with Seymour Hersh?
No.
So Seymour Hersh is an investigative journalist, and he is very renowned and well known. You'll probably recognize him when you find out what he did. But Seymour Hersh he gained notoriety from exposing the My Lai massacre in Vietnam.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Which was where like a bunch of people in villages got raped and murdered. And it kind of one of the things that started the end of the Vietnam War. It really started sour. When he exposed all that, it really started souring already low morale by the American people to mm-hmm. be in this war. So, and then he wrote exposés on Watergate and a whole bunch of other stuff. What else? He exposed Abu Ghraib prison in the Middle East where we were torturing guys, you know. And then also he said that Assad didn't gas his own people, which he obviously didn't. But he has a Substack, so he came out and wrote this article on Nord Stream 2 pipeline. Remember, that is the one in that Russia owns with Germany and brings Russian gas. I'm not sure if it's liquid natural gas or if it's just regular fuel to Germany. And it's what Germany relies on for fuel for heating houses and everything that they need it for. And if you'll remember, it blew up a few months ago, and we blamed Russia for it, but we have video of Joe Biden like last year saying if Russia invades Ukraine, which is tanks or troops over the border, it will not be a thing anymore. Joe Biden says it. So we can go here and let's see. I've got the okay, here we go. I've got the YouTube clip of Joe Biden saying it.
If Russia invades, that means tanks or troops crossing the border of Ukraine again, then there will be no longer a Nord Stream 2. We will bring an end to it.
Doesn't get much clearer than that.
How will you do that exactly, since the project and control of the project is within Germany's control?
We will, I promise you, we'll be able to do it.
So that's Joe Biden saying that if Russia invades Ukraine, he will bring an end to the Nord Stream 2 pipeline. And then the Nord Stream 2 pipeline explodes after.
If you're Russia. A homeowner in Oregon,
oh, whoops.
And you're still paying for electricity, then I've got some big news
for
you.
Oh, sorry, guys.
Just weeks ago, the federal government passed an extension to the...
Okay. Got that stopped. Sorry about that. So yeah, So Joe Biden says, if Russia invades Ukraine, we'll put an end to it. And then it explodes. And we obviously did it. And we say, oh, no, Vladimir Putin blew it up, you know. So they're saying, oh, because he's a childish psycho. He did it to prove that he could do it. He did it to, but they have in Russia a switch that turns it on and off. It's probably more complicated, but I just envision like an old school valve to a hose, and you could just twist that and turn it off. You wouldn't need to go blow it up, right?
Right.
And then let's do a little thought experiment. This is all just for fun. It's not true. Nothing that I'm saying is real. Your daughter constantly cracks her knuckles while we're watching TV. It grosses me out so bad. She's going to end up with terrible arthritis because of it. I try to get her. Every time she does it, I pinch her. She keeps doing it. She's loud pops every 5 minutes. It's so gross. I hate it. Imagine if I go to you, I go, hey, Deborah, next time Emily cracks her knuckles while we're watching The Last of Us, I'm going to murder her. I'm going to murder her. I'm going to bury her right out there in the pasture. And then I think The Last of Us comes on Sundays. You know, Monday morning, she's not answering calls. She's disappeared. You call the police. Police come out to the house. You go, I think that there's a body buried in the pasture. They go out. They dig her up. She's out there. She's got her knuckles cracked. She's dead, though.
Okay, God.
It probably was me, right?
Probably, since you said you were going to do it.
Yeah. And then, like, what if I had a neighbor and, you know, they were friends of ours or something, and they were having trouble with water. So for some reason, we decided just to, like, set up some pipes. And we're like, we got enough water from our well here. How about you guys give us a little bit of money every year, or help us with the construction? And we can share our well with you. They move out. Some new people move in. They're total dicks. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, I don't have a contract with them or anything. Do you think it would make sense for me to go blow up my land? Mm-hmm. Or would I just kind of, you know, just turn off the valve?
Seems like that would be the most reasonable. Where did it blow up?
In the ocean. So it's like special SEAL team stuff, you know. Uh-huh. So here, let's read a little bit of this article. This is from New York Post. I get a lot of stuff from New York Post. It's the only stuff that'll... But like, if you ever like look up New York Post, anything about Israel, they're super pro-Israel, you know? But they're the only ones that'll do a little bit, be a little bit right-wing in the mainstream media. So Pulitzer Prize... So this guy, Seymour Hersh, he's been a darling of the left his whole life, you know? Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist Seymour Hersh has alleged U.S. Navy divers laid bombs that destroyed the Nord Stream 2 natural gas pipeline. So it's natural gas. LNG is what they call it, liquid natural gas pipeline under the Baltic Sea last September, drawing a denial from the Pentagon Wednesday. Hmm. Hersh, who scooped journalism's top award more than five decades ago for exposing the My Lai massacre of Vietnamese civilians by U.S. troops in 1968, cited an unnamed source in reporting on Substack that Americans planted remotely triggered explosives that wrecked three of the four pipelines built to carry natural gas from Russia to Europe. Oh, also, Victoria Nuland, the F the EU lady, you know?
Uh-huh.
From that thing about Ukraine, when you watched that movie about Ukraine, and there's that phone call where she says Yachts is the guy, fuck the EU.
Uh-huh.
That's Victoria Nuland. She said pretty much the exact same thing before it happened. So Hersh 85 went on to claim that the Navy conducted the operation under the cover of a NATO maritime exercise. Ball Tops 22. So he's saying that they were doing an exercise and planted the stuff then and then blew it up later, I think is what he's saying.
So it wouldn't look so obvious.
Yeah. In a short statement, Pentagon spokesman Marine Corps Lieutenant Colonel Garen J. Garn told the Post the United States was not involved in the Nord Stream explosion, reiterating the Defense Department's response to the same question in October. Swedish officials suspected the blast were the result of gross sabotage, and some Western officials were quick to blame the attacks on Moscow as it blocked gas supplies to Europe in response to sanctions over the last year's invasion in Ukraine, which would have been, you know, the right thing to do on their part on strategically, but not to blow it up.
Yeah.
The only thing that you could say is like why they blew it up is to make it look like we did it.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, if it came out that we did it and it was understood by everybody, that's an act of war against Russia. But, you know, I don't think anything's going to come of it. These are deliberate actions, not an accident, Danish Prime Minister Mette Frederiksen said at the time. The situation is as serious as it gets. Russian Foreign Ministry spokeswoman Maria Zakharova said in response to Hirsch's report that Moscow has repeatedly expressed its belief that the U.S. and NATO were involved in the explosions. Prior to the invasion, President Biden had threatened that the Nord Stream 2 project connecting Russia and Germany would not move forward if an attack took place, causing some to suspect U.S. involvement when the pipelines exploded 7 months later. If Russia invades, that means tanks or troops crossing the border of Ukraine again, then there will no longer be a Nord Stream 2, Biden said on February 7th. So that's what we just saw. We will bring an end to it. Well, Germany initially resisted canceling the project because they need gas. It gets cold there, you know?
Yeah.
It halted the pipeline certification 2 days before the Russian invasion in the last-ditch effort to prevent the war. Hirsch's report suggested Biden ordered the explosion to stop Russian President Vladimir Putin from weaponizing natural gas for his political and territorial ambitions, as Germany and the rest of Europe relied heavily on Russia for natural gas. So if he still had that pipeline, he would be able to negotiate with Germany, pretty big world power, you know, to be more on his side than on the NATO side, I think. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And, you know, the real losers in all this is Germany. Like we screwed them pretty bad. And then I think we're making them buy gas from us. So
great.
Without the pipelines, Europe would be forced to end its reliance on Moscow, starving Russia of billions of dollars that could have been contributed to its war effort, the report alleged. Hirsch, a former reporter for the Associated Press and New York Times, as well as a longtime contributor to The New Yorker, quoted White House spokesperson Adrienne Watson as calling his report false and complete fiction. Hirsch also quoted CIA spokesperson Tammy Thorpe, who wrote in an email, "This claim is completely and utterly false." So Hirsch previously drew the wrath of the U.S. government when he claimed in 2013 that the official story of the operation that killed Osama bin Laden was one big lie. 2 years later, Hirsch published an account in the London Review of Books that claimed the Al-Qaeda kingpin was a prisoner of Pakistani authorities at the time he was killed, and that the CIA was tipped off to his whereabouts by a member of that country's powerful intelligence service rather than bin Laden's courier, as the Obama administration claimed. So that's all that. So nice. He wrote this big article, put it out on Substack, and he's like, they're calling him like a blogger and stuff, even though he's, you know, got all the credentials.
He's a journalist. And
he, I think he cites a lot of unnamed sources, you know, but that's probably why he can get all these unnamed sources, is because for his whole career, he was a real investigative journalist who wouldn't give up his sources. And when you do that, people tend to keep telling you things, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's so crazy just to see, like, that was a journalist in your day. And like a journalist in our day is Don Lemon, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Wow.
So that's going on. I mean, it seems plain as day to me. And I think the government just relies on gaslighting people to the point and saying like, oh, he's a blogger because he put it out on Substack because nobody will publish it anymore because it's the real deal and everybody else is controlled by the government.
I'm surprised that there wasn't more hoopla around the explosion.
Well, exactly, Deborah. Why do you think that is?
Because they wanted to keep it under wraps.
Yeah, because it's obvious. Because anybody that uses their adult brain could be like, well, Joe Biden said that he was going to do this. And then it happened. When he said he would do it, when the stipulations for doing it were met. And then that happened, and then he did it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean...
Yeah,
that should they sh- and they're not addressing that. They're not saying, like, they're just saying, oh no, Putin did it because he's childish and wants to punish the world. So I mean, that's always there, but it still needs to be addressed. And all they're doing is saying like, oh, that's false, you know, there's no explanation or anything like that. So we got the Biden confession, the pre-confession, Victoria Nuland confession of something that happens. So yeah, that's that. And then like what I said, everything's happening everywhere all at once, you know, and that's kind of getting lost in the fray.
Yes. Yeah.
So are you a big Tom Green fan?
The actor / comedian?
Yeah.
No.
I love Tom Green. I used to love the Tom Green show on MTV. I loved Freddy Got Fingered. Fantastic, hilarious movie. I think it got voted the worst movie of the year one year. I disagree. And
he was in Austin Powers.
Really?
Mm-hmm. He played Dr. Evil's son.
No, that's Seth Green.
Oh, you're right.
Pedophile.
Sorry.
Pedophile said Green. Seth Green.
Okay. Tom Green, yeah.
Here's Tom Green. So watch this. Tom Green might be awake. Let's see. Oh, it's doing this thing to me. I got to reload, I think. Okay. Sorry, guys. Okay, here we go.
Hi, I'm Tom Green, and forgot to mention the other reason this UFO information is coming out now is because they're trying to distract us all from the fact that we're about to get released the Epstein Island list, as well as what's going on in Palestine, Ohio, with the train derailment and the chemical release of chemicals into the air, which is being called possibly as bad as Chernobyl, and the fact that World War III might be about to start in the Ukraine war between USA, Russia, and China. So that's what's going on. Good to see you guys. Hope you guys are having a great day. There's UFOs.
Yeah. So massive distractions. Tom Green knows it. You want to do your UFO stories?
Yeah, just one comment about there was a town hall meeting for residents of Palestine, Ohio.
Right.
And I'm not sure if it got called off or if the train people decided not to come. Did you hear anything about that?
No, I didn't hear about the town hall. I've heard all sorts of different stories about it. I know the some sort of government agency is saying it's fine to drink the water and breathe the air there.
Fish are all dead.
People's chickens are dying, cats are dying, people are like getting rashes. I've seen some crazy video of people like boiling water and what's happening. Just it's so insane. I mean, these are the people that told us it was okay to breathe the air at ground zero after 9/11 and all those people died of cancer. And then the same people who are telling us that we need to wear a mask to protect us from the air when there's no issue at all because of a airborne virus, you know? Like, would if this happened, this would never happen where you live because there's no train that goes by your house like that. But would you feel comfortable drinking the water and breathing the air?
God, no.
Yeah. They're saying that people with wells need to test the water. And it's, I guess it's 10% of the nation's population lives in this area that's affected. It's crazy. It's a poor, depressed Rust Belt area, you know, Western Pennsylvania and Eastern, Northeastern Ohio. We've got friend, you know, Midnight Mike from OBDM lives right by there. Our friend Ghost from My Third Eye lives out there in Western Pennsylvania. And it's a bad deal, but there's rivers there. We're seeing all the video of these fish. They're dead. And they're telling people, oh yeah, go. I've heard so many different conflicting reports from authorities telling people what's okay, what's not okay. And then they just, all this stuff, I guess it's, I can't remember the chemical that it is, but it's used to make PVC. So in its raw state, I guess it's really unstable and binds to water is what I saw some guy who's like a
perfect
microbiologist or something talking about it.
Just perfect.
Yeah. So acid rain, poisoned groundwater, poisoned rivers and streams. And this is in a somewhat rural area where people have wells. Like, imagine if this happened at my house, this would be so devastating. This is a huge, huge deal. Like, what if this happened? Like, I'd be like, okay, well, I can move, but who's going to buy my house?
Right.
Who's going to buy this property now? It's just poisoned forever.
God.
And they just burned it all. They lit it on fire and burned it. And like, I'm supposed to feel bad because I have a diesel tractor and not a Tesla. You know, like, where's the EPA? Where's Extinction Rebellion? You know, like, where's the people telling me that I can't have a gas stove on this?
Mm-hmm.
Where's Mayor Pete Buttigieg? He's the transportation, whatever.
Secretary.
Yeah, he hasn't done anything about it. He's gone. He recently went and told people that there's too many white people on construction sites. You know, that was his big thing that he went and did a meeting on while this was happening. So.
What was the cause of the wreck?
I don't know. But there's been a whole bunch of, there's just been another one in Michigan that I just saw. Uh-huh. That's getting up. I think this is close to the Great Lakes, all sorts of stuff like that. You know, we hear a lot of people who are prepper minded think that like going to Michigan, the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, would be the ideal place to be because of the proximity to large bodies of fresh water. And, you know, maybe that's not going to be the case anymore.
Yeah.
A whole bunch of, toxic spills have been happening. UFOs are coming out, and they're calling them UFOs. So what do you got on the UFOs?
All right. I have just a little roundup. As we know, debris was recovered from the crash site off South Carolina coast. Evidently there were priority sensors and electronics recovered. On January 28th, the first balloon entered airspace off Alaska. These are the additional three balloons that have come down. The first one was shot down by missiles in South Carolina coast. The second balloon entered airspace off of the Aleutian Islands, and it was shot down by missiles on February 4th. And then
was that the one that was shot? When was the one? The original was Billings, Montana, though, right?
Where they first saw it.
Oh, so they saw it first in Montana, or they shoot it down in Montana?
Oh, well, that's another one.
Okay.
That's another one. There was another one on February 9th over Alaska. And Biden gave the order to shoot it down on February 10th. It was at a lower altitude. It was only flying at 40,000 feet. And so Biden said it was a safety hazard for flights traveling at that altitude around that area. And then February 10th, again over Alaska, it was monitored by U.S. aircraft. And when it crossed into Canada, Canada aircraft joined U.S. aircraft. They're all having a little convoy. And then on February 11th, Biden had it shot down over the Yukon, which was 100 miles into Canadian territory.
Way up in northern Canada.
Yeah. And then February 12th, another high altitude object that was shot down over Lake Huron. And that was first detected in Montana. So that's the one that you were referring to, I guess. And so the three subsequent to the original were not as big. They said that one had a payload of like three buses.
Yeah.
These had the payload of a Volkswagen or something, one car. So
what are they saying? Are they saying what's piloting them? What any of the electronics are? Are they saying
they
that, are they saying they're all Chinese, or are they just not saying?
They're not saying.
And they were calling some of them UFOs, right?
UFAs, unidentified flying aircraft. What's the difference?
Yeah.
You know, they just have to come up with a new thing.
Yeah, the one that they were trying to roll out for a long time was UAPs, unidentified aerial phenomena.
So they have a new team. They developed a new interagency team, and they're using a wider range of radar data to keep an eye on all these strange balloons flying overhead. And the intact payload recovered from the ocean was the size of a bus, and it was taken to Quantico for analysis, and it's said to contain surveillance equipment and other key technology, communication and intelligence tools, and all this is inconsistent with equipment that would be on board a weather balloon. So I thought, okay, you know, remember I talked about DFR lab, the Atlantic DFR lab. I thought,
yeah,
you know, this must be right up their alley. What are they saying about this? And
the Atlantic Council, right?
The Atlantic Council. So Matthew,
it was a big NGO kind of deal that seemed kind of mysterious that you were looking into, diving deep into.
They have offices all over the globe, Latin America, Africa, Eurasia, Europe, China, Middle East, Indonesia, South Asia, Turkey. Those are just some.
Every continent.
Every continent. So Matthew Kronig is the Scowcroft Center Director.
Yeah, that's now, named after General Scowcroft.
Brent Scowcroft, who worked on the Tower Commission, investigated the Iran-Contra scandal.
Yeah, he's a dirty, dirty guy. You know,
he worked for Ford. He worked for Bush.
Did you ever used to watch the Ali G show on HBO?
No.
Sacha Baron Cohen's like original deal. He interviewed General Scowcroft as Ali G.
Oh my God.
Yeah. In like the early 2000s.
Huh.
Yeah.
I'll have to look for that.
Yeah.
So anyway, this Matthew Kronig is the director of the Scowcroft Center. And he says, this is a quote, "China must believe that it provides additional additive value or they wouldn't have taken the risk. In addition, where they're flying, this is concerning. They're flying over the U.S. intercontinental ballistic sites. In addition, I think it just shows a brazenness on the part of China that it feels it can challenge the United States and there will be no consequences. And then
so far it seems like they can if it's them.
Yeah. Emma Ashford, who is also at the
I don't know. I was saying it Scowcroft because that's how Ali G said it. But
all right, we'll go with Ali G because he's a pretty smart guy. So she is strategy and security for them. And she says, I really do think this whole incident was blown out of proportion. The media and much of Washington spent several days fretting about the balloon and what it meant about the rise of Chinese power. Look, it was a balloon. It was collecting intelligence. Satellites overfly the United States every day, taking similar pictures. So, and then I found, I just used their search engine on their website, 5 questions and expert answers about the curious case of the Chinese spy balloon. And I won't read the whole thing, but they have various people answering questions. First question, what should happen now that the balloon has been shot down? And they say recover and exploit the balloon for intelligence and counterintelligence. Send a message about costs and red lines to the PRC, the Chinese Communist Party, through economic, military, and diplomatic actions.
This is what she's saying that they should do?
This is, yeah, this.
Military this, actions is what she says? Military this, and economic?
This so, is someone else. This is, this question was answered by Arun Iyer, who is a non-resident senior fellow with the Scowcroft Center for Defense Practice and leads its project, Adding Color to the Gray Zone, which I didn't dig into that yet.
So he's saying that he thinks
appropriate send a message.
Response to this would be economic sanctions and military action?
Yes.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah,
that's good.
Yeah, an encouragement of things like the recent Czech overtures to Taiwan could be a part of this.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's more, but I'll go to the second question. What do you suspect is the real story behind the balloon? And this again, back to Matthew Kronig, he says that the balloon has limited additive value beyond what the Chinese could gather from satellites. If this is true, why did they take the risk? China must believe it provides an additive value. And then Aaron Iyer again says recently raided China police stations operating inside the U.S. cities, they should have forcible repatriation. Thank you. My mouth is just not working. Through Operation Fox Hunt. So let's see. What else does he say about that? Due to its self-perceived economic, diplomatic, and even military strength, the PRC continues to take steps brazenly violate U.S. sovereignty.
So pretty much from what I can tell is this Atlantic Council is just a big neocon NGO. And if we know what neocons love, they love two things. They love Israel and they love war. And they would love war with China, I think. And I think we ask them for what we should do. I think economic sanctions on China is just another domino down in the closeness to that. I don't know. I don't know if China even wants to go to war with us. I'm not scared of it. China just seems like they're better. They do exactly what we do, but better. Like they always say, when we want something that a country has, we show up. I'm doing it right now. America, I say we. America shows up with soldiers, guns, bombs, and takes it by force. And China shows up with a briefcase and works with the people. Uh-huh. It's not always ethical what they're doing, but they show up and they do stuff that makes people want to work with them. And if I lived in a horrible third world country, like all the places, like China's doing a lot of stuff in Africa right now. There's an old, older documentary, probably about 10 years old, that you can watch called Empire of Dust. It's on YouTube, and it's about Chinese working in Africa. Uh-huh. It's kind of like a study on cultural differences. It's like these Chinese guys trying to work with like local African dudes as they're like construction employees, and they're just like not working and stealing all their stuff. And it's pretty good, but it shows like how much into Africa China is right now. But yeah, they show up and they do stuff. They don't just blow it up and kill people, you know, and replace you know, democratically elected officials like what we do.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, I don't know. This is just what the people in the Atlantic Council want. You know?
Yeah.
So what do you think is going on with all these? Because we never have had this before, Deborah. And there's what, 5, 6, 7, 8 of them? How many? I can't keep track of how many there are so far in the past 2 weeks.
Yeah, there was 4 that I spoke about.
And why is it all happening now, do you think? Why is it all just coming to the light now? Has it always been happening? Because we've heard, when I remember you said that Trump had 3 of them or something.
Yes. Yeah.
I misunderstood what you told me when you told me that story. So what you were saying is that Trump knew about them and withheld the information, or they withheld
it? They withheld it from Trump.
Okay.
I don't think he knew.
Okay, got it. Because I thought that the left was like using it as, well, Trump did it too, and he just didn't tell us.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that's the case or if they withheld it from him. But
yeah,
what, I mean, why is, in your opinion, what's going on?
God, I don't know. You know, China says they've had.
Yeah, I mean, everybody's
Russia
doing it.
Had,
I think everybody does it to everybody. Why? I mean, is it?
Why is it such a big deal?
All
now?
These things coming out right now, just like I said, everything's happening. It's all mm-hmm. happening, and I can't keep track of anything. You know.
Well, yeah, of course, everybody's spying on everybody else. You know, that's why the satellites are up there. We all know that.
Yeah. But if a couple Chinese spy balloons come down, they take pictures of missile silos that, and we know that they're doing it, and this mm-hmm. maybe this happens all the time. And this is diverting attention, you know, everything's mm-hmm. diverting attention from everything else.
Yeah.
Here's this article on Mayor Pete. This is from Breitbart, so take it with a grain of salt. You know, Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg on Monday opted to suggest that there are too many white people working in construction, choosing to make these remarks less than 2 weeks after the toxic chemical train derailment on the Ohio-Pennsylvania line. So he's just talking about how when these communities of color finally get a construction project to come to their area, everybody on the job site does not reflect the community, which is, you know, maybe true. And I know that unions do work with disenfranchised communities and try to recruit people from those communities into local unions. And a lot of times they do. And a lot of times the people don't work out. I'm what would be described as an expert on union labor. I spent a long time through multiple trades and multiple locals in it, and I've seen everything. But this is it just seems kind of like a dumb thing to be spending your time on when there's some real deal stuff going on.
Yeah.
So it's like, oh, I'm going to go put in an elevator in a black community in North Portland. Should I just be like, hey guys, I need an extra help. Let's get somebody from the neighborhood that's not working and just have them go wire up the controller. You know, this, when you're riding in the elevator, you usually want someone who's qualified, has gone through an apprenticeship program, and knows what they're doing when you're on that elevator or escalator or you know, anything. So
yeah, like those people headed from Hawaii back to San Francisco and the plane just plummeted.
I didn't hear about this.
I don't have any of that information in front of me, so I'm just talking off the top of my head.
This is recent?
This week.
Okay.
Or maybe late last week, but they were flying, headed towards San Francisco. Oh, there's this big fat squirrel on my fence. That's so nice to see. And it just, I think it was on takeoff, and it just plummeted to, I believe they said, no, it couldn't have been 800 feet. It must have been 8,000 feet. It plummeted to 8,000 feet above the ocean and then started climbing back up. And I haven't seen a lot of this on the news or anything, but the one little piece that I did say said that the pilot was going to go for some additional training.
Yeah. Great. I wonder if he's from the... He's probably from like Hunter's Point or something. He needed someone local to pilot the plane.
Yeah. So, but that's, I mean, you know, if he was flying at 40,000 feet, which evidently is the norm, and fell to within 8,000 feet, that would be a little bit scary.
Yeah. That would be terrifying.
Yeah.
So have you ever heard, you know what I've heard about Pete Buttigieg is that he was never gay before he entered the public eye.
Huh. Why?
Why did he turn gay?
Yeah. To get votes.
Yeah. To get to meet the requirements. He's widely known to be like a CIA, like plant guy.
Uh-huh.
There's some really strange pictures of him like doing thirst trap photos at Auschwitz. It's very, very strange.
Wow.
There's a whole genre of gay guys doing thirst traps at concentration camps.
What for?
Who knows? I'm not in the community.
That is a very strange thing. Speaking of the gay community, just one more little piece that I thought was kind of funny, that Marjorie Taylor Greene and our friend George Santos are co-sponsoring a bill that would ban LGBTQ books in classrooms. The bill aims to remove sexually explicit material from schools. The text of the bill has not yet been published. But as we know, the Republican far right recently has rallied around so-called anti-groomer campaigns aimed at ending the sexualization of children. Santos is the only gay member of the GOP.
So he is gay now. It was unclear before.
Oh, no, he's definitely gay.
Oh, yeah, because didn't we talk about his husband?
His husband.
His male husband.
His male husband. The Dems have 9 openly gay. And he has positioned himself as a hardline conservative and supported DeSantis's Don't Say Gay bill.
Yeah, which we know doesn't say anything about being gay. It just says you can't teach kids like below third grade about, you know, sexual orientation.
But isn't that interesting that he and Marjorie Taylor Greene are co-sponsors?
Well, I'm not going to let you say anything bad about Marjorie Taylor Greene because she is the queen of my dreams. I love her very much. But yeah, no, it's this guy just keeps getting better and better every week, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
But that's what we need. We need some good, you know, gay GOP members to come out in the opposition of the other thing. So who knows? I don't believe anything George Santos does is genuine. I think he saw a place where he could get in and he did it. And he's meeting his trying to get this guy's a scam artist.
Yeah.
We see him scamming pet owners for $2,000 at a time. I mean, this guy's this guy's doing the real low-grade bottom of the barrel shit.
Yeah, and he has no bottom. He has no bottom.
Yeah. Well, that's debatable. He has his husband about it. But did you see Mitt Romney trying to get tough with him at the
calling him a sick puppy?
He called him an ass. That's such like an old boomer thing to call somebody's just an ass with nothing behind it. Like you got to put something behind it. So what are you calling? Are you calling someone an like a naked a human rear end, or are you calling him a donkey?
Donkey.
Well, I guess that's a insult if you're a hardline GOP member.
Right.
Yeah, you want to be called an elephant.
Exactly.
Yeah. So that's it. Pete Buttigieg wants more diversity on the job site.
Okay.
Probably doesn't talk about how to do it. We've got, you know, all sorts of programs for little urban underachievers to get into the union, but, you know, it doesn't really work out a lot of the time because you have to actually like go through an apprenticeship and show up and do work, mm-hmm. which a lot of people that don't have that sort of background aren't good at doing. Take that as however you will. I've seen it firsthand. Some work out really, really well and turn out to be guys that were cut out for it. And, you know, there's people, normal, suburban, middle-class, white people that aren't cut out for the trades, you know. Most most millennial white kids now would probably have a real hard time getting through a union apprenticeship program. So it's not for everybody. But let's get Mayor Pete out there to East Palestine, Ohio, to do something about it. But it's got us talking about it. Putting this, having him do this instead of doing the real thing is distracting us from more and more stuff. It's all distraction. PSYOPs. PSYOPs upon PSYOPs upon PSYOPs, Deborah. Mm-hmm. I can't keep my head straight. So let's see if there's anything else. I was looking into all this stuff today. And you know what I found? I found this story. And I came to a crazy conspiracy conclusion. So the U.S. deeply troubled by Israeli settlement move after Blinken visit. So this is from Reuters, February 13th. United States opposes Israel's retroactive authorization of Jewish settler outposts in the occupied West Bank. Secretary of State Anthony Blinken, I like to call him A. Blinken, said on Monday, adding that he was deeply troubled by the move that came less than 2 weeks after he raised U.S. opposition to such moves on a trip to the region. We strongly oppose such unilateral measurements, which exacerbate tensions and undermine the prospects for a negotiated two-state solution, Blinken said in a statement, reiterating his call for all parties to avoid actions that can further escalate tensions between Israelis and Palestinians. Israel's move on Sunday to legalize 9 settler outposts in and build new homes within established settlements came after months of simmering violence in the West Bank. U.S. Department spokesperson Ned Price said Blinken had made his opposition to the legalization of settler outposts clear during the visit to Israel and the West Bank that concluded on January 31st. So this is a great sentence that pretty much sums up our relationship with Israel right here, showing that we are just the bitch of Israel. I'm not. God damn it. America is the bitch of Israel. Asked what the United States would do about the Israeli move to go ahead with authorizations, Price did not outline any actions. So absolutely nothing. Israel, of course, is going to make its own sovereign decisions. We have made our opinion, our very strong opinion on this very clear, Price said. So they've made it clear.
Yeah.
They've made it clear that they're not going to do anything, but they are very clear that they don't think that they should do it. U.S. officials were having intensive discussions with Israel, the Palestinians, and other countries in the region. and U.S. efforts to de-escalate tensions would continue, he added. A senior Israeli official who declined to be identified said Israel was not surprised by the U.S. response, since the two sides have disagreed on the issue for decades, which doesn't matter.
Just keep spinning the wheels.
These disagreements did not hurt and will not hurt the strong alliance between Israel and the United States, the official said. That's that. Yeah. So I got a video here. You want to watch a video on some settlements? Short one. Kind of just goes to show what they look like. The difference between settlements and outposts was one that I had never heard. So let's see if it'll play.
It changed completely in these 20 years in terms of numbers of settlers, in terms of areas which settlers are de facto controlling. This is the settlement of Modi'in Elite, which was established less than 25 years ago.
Right.
Yeah, and since then it's growing, and today its population is around 70,000 people.
So what we're seeing here is these gigantic multifamily kind of housing projects that Israelis go in and they bulldoze existing Palestinian structures and homes, and they build these big, huge, they're kind of like apartment complexes, but they're big ones. There's a documentary on Amazon about Orthodox Jews in, and they're going out to like from their neighborhoods in Brooklyn, and they're going out to some other county in New York and like building like these exact same things and moving everybody out there and displacing these, turning these little towns of like 5,000 people into these towns of like, they'll all of a sudden have like 80,000 more people in it, and they're all Orthodox Jews, and they just take over the town and like the politics there. But it's interesting because I'd never really seen these settlements that they talk about, and it looks very, very similar to this. It's like the same it's the same playbook.
For people to understand settlement and outpost, right, what's the difference?
Well, the usually settlement refers to Israeli settlements which are officially approved by the Israeli government, and the Israeli outposts are Israeli settlements which had been built also by the Israeli government but without official approval. Both settlements. Both
so an outpost is not approved. I don't know what the difference really is, but that, I don't know if that makes any sense at all. A settlement is approved by the Israeli government. An outpost is not approved by the Israeli government, but it kind of seemed like he said it was implemented by the Israeli government as well.
Right. Yeah.
He's reveals a good thing right here.
Out there in order to achieve the same goal, which is to Judaize growing part of the West Bank.
So how would you describe that policy?
Apartheid.
Apartheid.
So what do we see on that hill over there?
This is one out of around 40 new herding outposts which were established in the last decade in the West Bank.
What's a herding outpost?
Herding outpost means that one family, perhaps with a few youngsters, is coming and is basically taking over a huge area. Palestinians who cross certain point, you can see the valley down there. If you start going up, you're exposed immediately to massive violence, etc. Everything is backed by the military, of course. The military is...
protects them.
The military protects them all the time.
And you've been doing this for, you said, almost two decades. Has this increased?
Actually, during the Trump administration years, okay, these are the years where the crucial years in terms of geographical expansion. See this road? It's going to be a new access road. This is a new access road to a new part of the settlement.
So, Deborah, all that talk about Trump being a anti-Semite.
Uh-huh.
He's a huge Zionist. He allowed, said all this stuff happened under his presidency. That's when it really started to explode. And we know because his son-in-law, Jared Kushner, quite possibly the Antichrist, is, from a huge really, really powerful Zionist family. His daughter's, you know, converted to whatever sect they're from. And yeah. So I'll watch a little bit more. It's a
They have been united.
Palestinian work.
Of course. Of course. I mean, no one else does this work. These are very young people.
So all the people building it for them are Palestinians. So the bigger picture in terms of... Crazy stuff.
That's so crazy.
Yeah. They don't have jobs and they're not able to go work in Israel. And there's nothing there for them to do, you know? So, yeah. I just thought that that was a good little video that kind of... I've never, like, put a face to the name settlement, you know?
Right. I thought it would be, you know, tents.
But they show they have full on, like, they look like here, watch a little more. They look like Southern California, kind of San Fernando Valley suburban neighborhoods, like
what
with houses too.
What you've documented settlement expansion over time. How would you describe it?
Well, what we see in the last years is one of the biggest booms in terms of construction in the West Bank. We haven't seen so much construction happening actually since I started monitoring. We're not talking only about construction in settlement, we're talking about very, very expensive and heavy infrastructure projects which are being built in the West Bank in the last years, which we haven't seen being built for decades, since actually Oslo. The present infrastructure had been exhausted in order to bring hundreds of thousands of new settlers into the Israeli settlement West Bank. They need now to expand the infrastructure. They need more water, they need more roads, we need more telecommunication infrastructure.
So a Palestinian state?
Which state? There's no Palestinian state.
There's no Palestinian state.
The land is gone.
So that's that. Pretty depressing. If you have any sort of sympathy towards the Palestinians there, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, this, it just goes to show, this guy's doing this video. He's a Jewish guy from Israel, and he's against it. There's people there that are speaking up and out about it. But I mean, you saw there, they're inside the West Bank in Palestinian territory. And they're, it sounds like what he's saying is their goal was to get as many people in there as possible as quickly as they could, because then that would make it so that would justify more infrastructure being brought in and built. You know, he said water and, you know, telecommunications, all that stuff, neighborhoods. But yeah, very interesting. Very sad to me. A lot of people, it's not sad to them. But violence on both sides. I would argue that all the violence coming from the Palestinian side is what we like to call blowback, which is what, you know, kind of like 9/11, what Ron Paul said. If we weren't over there messing around, they wouldn't need to come here and do terrible stuff to us. So, yeah, it's a bad situation. I have a lot of sympathy for those Palestinians who are living in an apartheid state, in my opinion. So, let's see. Right over an hour and a half. You want to do a fun story? I don't know how fun it is.
Yeah.
This is from the Mirror. So my wife, Emily, is terrified of our rooster, Ricky. He's a massive, massive guy. And he hates her for some reason. He doesn't mess around with me. He goes the other way when I come in. She has to fight him every time she goes in. She's scared of him. So this is an exclusive from the Mirror, which might be an English publication, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Exclusive. Man killed by aggressive pet rooster as daughter shares horrors of malicious attack. Experienced bird handler Jasper Krause was killed in the savage attack from the cockerel, losing liters of blood, with his grief-stricken daughter revealing the same bird also attacked her young child in Ireland.
Oh my God.
The daughter of a man killed by his pet rooster was warned of the dangers of aggressive poultry after the bird also attacked her young child. Jasper Kraus, 67, suffered a heart attack after the bird plunged its spur into his leg, causing him to lose liters of blood. Daughter Virginia Gwinnon, 33, says Jasper, a dad of two and granddad of two, was an experienced animal handler, and while attacks are rare, warned owners to watch out for signs of aggression. Trainee healthcare assistant Virginia from South Roscommon, Ireland, said, "You wouldn't think a chicken can be dangerous, but they can be. It was a malicious attack. Absolutely brutal. There were liters of blood all over the floor when I arrived. This particular bird was thought to be a nice and docile breed and good for children, but this shows any breed can be dangerous."
Wow.
Having pet chickens is a big thing for families now, especially getting children involved. For this to happen is so rare and unbelievable, but it can happen. Retired horse trainer Jasper was out in his garden on April 28th last year when the rooster attacked from behind. He lost so much blood that it caused a secondary heart attack as he passed away under an hour later. Now Virginia is warning of the dangers of owning poultry, encouraging owners to watch out for signs of aggression. She had formerly owned the rooster, which killed her father, but he took it on after it had tried to attack her daughter, Josie, 3 years old. She said a year earlier, the same rooster jumped the wall and jumped on Josie's back. After that, I knew I had to get rid. We should have put him down there and then, because we knew he was no good. Yeah, I mean, that's what I would have done.
Yeah.
Jasper, who was in remission from cancer at the time of his death, was outside visiting his dog's grave when the rooster attacked.
Oh, my God.
The animal has since been put down, had a random aggressive outburst, and created a wound 1.5 centimeters deep. He was quickly losing blood from the deep wound and made it back to the house, and a friend who was there called an ambulance. Jasper collapsed from blood loss before the ambulance arrived.
Wow. Oh,
be careful out there, guys.
Really. About these aggressive chickens, I'm reading a book that Emily recommended me. It's The Horse Whisperer and Her Name.
Yeah, she's telling me about this. It's like this autistic lady who knows how to deal with animals because she has like more of like an animal, a brain that understands what they think.
Exactly.
So she can like, when like she was telling me the story, like all these horses were scared to go into a dark room, and it was because it was dark. And then like they just like light it up, and then the animals go in, and all sorts
of
stuff like that.
She goes to, you know, wherever she's needed, and looks at the space through the animal's eyes, whether it's a horse or a cow. But she went into this chicken farm where many of the female chickens were found just murdered horrifically by the roosters. And so after she observed for quite a while, she realized that in normal chicken breeding situations, the male does a little dance.
Yeah.
And then the female, you know, assumes the position and they have sex. But for some reason, the males weren't doing the little dance. They were just jumping up, you know, jumping on the females, and the females would try to scurry away and they'd get murdered.
Yeah. So did she find out why the rooster wasn't dancing?
They had bred together, bred these, you know, they're hoping to get, you know, fat chickens that are really strong.
Oh, and huge breasts.
And grow rapidly. And so they were, you know, breeding these chickens to get this end goal of having super chickens that, you know.
They're too fat to dance.
They're too fat to dance.
Wow.
Some of them, their legs are almost deformed because they grow so fast. And so,
I'm almost too fat to dance at this point.
You're You're crazy.
Yeah, that happened when we raised meat birds. We had one whose leg grew backwards. It was really sad. We should have killed him when it started happening. But it's like they grow so fast. Like one day, if their leg gets like a little kinked one day, the next day it's like on its way to being, it's done forever. Like this poor guy, we called him a Duncan Limp. He couldn't walk by the end. It was really sad. Like I don't like those Cornish cross hens that we had for meat. Like they're so gross. I don't have any desire to ever raise those again. They're just Franken chickens meant to breed and die, or eat and die is all they do.
Yeah.
They eat and get so fat by 8 weeks that they can't even barely move. A lot of them, if you let them go, like you have to, we went like 12 hours on, 12 hours off for their food. If I did it again, I would go like 8 hours with food for them. They'll eat until they die. Like they'll have heart attacks and stuff. So
yeah.
But that's a fun story about a murderer chick
raping chickens.
If you want to hear some more stuff about chickens, guys, I was on Monica Perez's show with Lanny and Nate from Reality Czars last week talking about the egg apocalypse, the shortage that isn't affecting me whatsoever, because I take good care of my chickens and don't feed them Purina garbage, which, you know, do what you got to do, guys, but that stuff's pure crap, and it's under a whole bunch of different brand names, not just Purina. It's all from the same factory, and wherever you are regionally, they sell it at Tractor Supply or Wilco or whatever the local big box farm store is. And it's garbage. Even if they are laying eggs, it's crap. It's all soy protein in there. The feed I give my chickens has no soy in it. And I don't know. Do what you got to do. If you can't afford good feed, hey, it's the same thing as like buying like organic or whatever at the grocery store when you go. So if it was up to me, I would spend the extra couple bucks. And But yeah, go to Monica Perez, Deep Dives with Monica Perez, and we did an episode on it. I give my thoughts on it there. We get a little conspiratorial, talk about the study that shows that egg yolks makes it so COVID can't bind to your receptors or whatever. There was actually a real medical study that came out before the vaccines. It's on PubMed. But I think that's a good spot to wrap up, Deborah. We've gone an hour 45 minutes. This was a good episode. Lots of information. It's all happening.
Boy.
Yeah. Psyops upon psyops upon psyops. And guys, the Patreon's going off. Last week's episode was fantastic. I think getting into this book, Orthodoxy and the Religion of the Future, with my friend Ryan, is going to be really fun. And yeah, check out the book if you have any interest in that, and kind of debunking the New Age and aliens. There's also another Orthodox book called The UFO Deception. It's not quite as good, I've heard, but worth checking out too. So just know the mysteries of the world can be explained up to a certain point, even when some people say that they're unexplainable. So... and then some things are just supposed to remain mysteries. And that's the awesome thing about Orthodoxy, is that it's that's what the priest will say. It's like, hey, there's some stuff we shouldn't know, and that we can't know, and that we're not equipped to know. We're not good enough to know it. So final thoughts, Deborah?
Just keep watching the sky.
Watching the skis.
What?
That's an OBDM reference. But thanks for being here. Thanks for doing some research, digging deep on the Atlantic Council. And we'll figure something out. I don't know. Maybe we won't. Patreon.com/Deborah Gets Red Pilled, guys. I'll get in there. Get in the $5 tier at least. And thanks to everybody that's donating every week. We're getting new people every week, and I can't believe
that's
we have
so awesome.
Multiple $20 donors, and they will be rewarded handsomely with some sort of products from my homestead monthly. So Thanks again, guys. We love you all, and we'll see you hopefully Saturday.
Okay.
Thanks, Deborah. Love you.
Thanks, Adam. Love you back.
Bye-bye.
Bye.